Golf Smarter number 301, published on October 4, 2011, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
How custom club fitting will improve your game with Tom Wishon.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to Golf Smarter. Tom, it's great to have you back.
Fred, thanks very much. I really appreciate the chance to talk about golf clubs because I think you know that's something that I've always been interested in a little bit.
Well, that's why we're interested in talking to you about it, because you, unlike other people that I've talked to, and I've talked to some individual club makers, but you speak for the industry of club making, custom club making.
Yeah, I've been in just about every aspect of the golf industry. You know, I started out my life as a PGA club pro, teaching professional. I got into club making and then eventually club design basically because I needed the income as a PGA pro. I didn't make enough in the old days, you know, so I taught myself the skills of club making and club repair, and that just triggered this explosion of interest, you know, to where I left that PGA side and then decided to go into the golf equipment industry. Went back through my scientific and engineering training, and in 1986 became a club designer. And all along, doing research to find out why some golf clubs work for some golfers and don't for others. And we'll lump that under the title club fitting research. So, yeah, I mean, and I've always written a lot and published a lot, and that came about mostly because way back when I didn't know anything, you know, in the 70s, and I would call up the various golf industry people in the equipment industry and ask them technical questions. I either got no answer or I got, you know, a lousy answer, and rarely, you know, got factual, truthful information. You know, so I kind of got frustrated with that, and I said, look, if I got to do all this research and figure this out on my own, I'm going to do it, but I want to learn exactly how golf clubs are supposed to work and do work and don't work for golfers, you know, for this. So my whole life and career has been an ongoing quest for more and more technical information about how golf clubs work and don't work for golfers with that. So at this point, now I'm 60 years old, you know, have been able to write a number of books and tons of magazine articles and try to get the word out to people about what are the facts of life about how golf clubs are supposed to perform for you. Because unfortunately, there's a lot of bad information out there, and there are an awful lot of golfers who have been misinformed and spent money for golf clubs that could have been spent a lot better, you know, to get them what they want, you know, in terms of clubs that will help them play to the best of their ability.
Well, when you say there's a lot of bad information out there, don't we call that advertising?
Well, you can. You know, I mean, I like to think that there are some people, you know, who advertise and market with really good, truthful, factual information, you know, out there. But it's hard for people who themselves are not technically trained to know the difference in golf clubs. It's hard for them to distinguish what's factual and what's not. So what you're left with is, if I heard it from the biggest company, it must be true. Because, you know, they wouldn't be a big, giant company if they didn't, you know, do things right.
Well, and look who's playing with the club.
Yeah, you know, or that. So, I mean, basically, you know, what we've lived with here is, you know, and this is, I'm a great fan of the history of the game going all the way back into the early days. And, you know, as golf became more of a mainstream sport in around 1845 with the invention of what we call the gutta-percha golf ball, all of a sudden a golf ball became very affordable, and the average working man now could buy, you know, golf balls to go play the game. Okay, so as the game grew in the late 1800s, where did you go to get golf clubs? Okay, you went to a custom club maker. Okay, you walked in a custom club maker shop. He sized you up one way or another, and then he built your clubs one at a time. And those were your golf clubs. You know, then all of a sudden, as the game continued to grow and we went into the early 1900s, you now had more and more golf courses. The golf courses hired golf pros, you know, for teaching golfers there, and the golf pros had little shops. So the golf pros went to the custom club makers and they said, hey, I can sell some clubs for you. Can you make up a bunch of sets of golf clubs that you can send to me, and I'll put them in my pro shop and I'll start selling them for you, you know, with that. And club makers said, yeah, more business. Okay, so what did they have to do? They had to think up a series of average standard specifications for the golf clubs, you know, what lengths, what lofts, what face angles, what weights, all those things. And so they picked these average standard specifications, built the sets, sold them, you know, to the pros, who then sold them to the golfers. And that began the business model that the golf equipment industry still follows today, where each one of these big golf club companies, they pick a series of standard specifications. They build the golf clubs to those series of standard specifications. They send them to all the pro shops and all the big golf retail stores. They go on the rack, and you walk in and buy one. Okay? It's similar, in a sense, to if you walk into a shoe store that has all the different colors and sizes and, has all the different colors and styles of the shoes, but the men's shoes are all only in a size 10 and the women's are in a size 7. You know? Just make it work.
Right, okay, well, right. So let's talk about the average golfer and custom club fitting. What, obviously, a lot of golfers just don't know that custom club fitting's available to them. And what is it that they are missing that they should know on why custom club fitting is so much better for them? I mean, you know, shoe size is one thing, but how it's going to be improve or affect their game?
Several things. First thing is the vast majority of golfers don't think that they're good enough to benefit from custom fitting.
Absolutely. Okay? Oh, wow. Nailed it right there.
They're very aware of the fact that the pros get custom fit, but the association that goes into their head from that is, yeah, pro needs to be custom fit because he's really, really, really good golfer. He can tell the difference. You know, it really is the opposite. You know, all of us golfers make swing mistakes, okay, some worse than others with that. We try maybe to take lessons, but that's where the athletic ability gets involved. You know, many of us just don't have the athletic ability to swing the club perfectly, so we swing with mistakes. You know, outside in, you know, early wrist cock release, you know, you name it, there's a whole myriad of them. Really good custom club fitting can make the golf club specifications so that they can reduce the per shot effects of certain bad swing mistakes, sometimes even erase it with this. You know, so if you slice about 35 yards, we probably can get that down to 15. I probably can't turn it into a draw, but wouldn't you rather play with a 15-yard fade rather than a 35-yard slice? Custom fitting can do that. You know, and there are many other examples of it. So truthfully, the golfers who think they're not good enough to be custom fit are really the ones who are going to benefit the most from being custom fit.
Wow. So I understand the idea that, there's going to be a difference for custom club making. The people first will think, I'm not good enough to have custom clubs made. Once I get my game in order, then I'll go out and research that. But what about the other thing that I think could be a major factor in their decision? And that would be, you know what, I really can't afford to have custom clubs made because they're probably so much more expensive than the stuff that's fairly good that I can buy at the local retail store.
Yeah, it's the association when people say, if I go to a custom tailor to get a suit, I'm going to pay a fortune, so I'll just go to the department store.
Right.
Okay, well, custom tailors have been around for 300 years. They've developed the awareness among consumers that they're the best. So they got to a point where they charged more for it, okay? It's not that way with custom club fitting because there's been so little marketing to tell golfers what a real good custom club fitter can do for them. You know, the other side of the coin you have in there is the fact that for the custom club fitter to be able to build those golf clubs one at a time so every one of the 13 key fitting specifications is matched to that golfer's swing, he can't do that with club heads that have the major brand names on them. He has to be able to do that from specialty companies who design a whole series of different driver heads and fairway wood heads, iron heads, and all that have the ability to be adjusted and built to all this wide array of custom fitting specs. So the golfer looks at the custom fit golf club and he might not recognize the name on the bottom of the sole, and because of the power of marketing, he thinks, oh, how do I know the titanium in that is as good as the titanium in this one I've heard of, you know, for that. So, but the bottom line is, because there's less awareness of real custom club fitting, the club fitters can't charge a ton. And so even when you go to some of the best of the custom club fitters, very experienced, you're probably going to pay the same for that custom club that you will for any premium brand name club that you buy standard off the rack.
Amazing. Well, that really kind of leads into my next thing, because I have to mention that this episode of Golf Smarter Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And Audible would like the Golf Smarter audience to go out and see what it's like to get an audiobook. And, well, if you listen to podcasts, you're already a consumer of audio content, and you understand the value of on-demand content where you can listen at your leisure. You can listen when you're commuting. You can listen when you're walking the dog. You can listen when you're working out. You can listen any other times where you can't necessarily watch something or can't necessarily read a book at the same time. And, Tom, I'm really excited. Our audience, if they sign up at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, they can get a free audiobook to start their subscription through Audible. And I'm really excited to say that this week our recommendation for the Audible book that they should try is one of your books.
Wonderful.
The 12 Myths That Could Wreck Your Game by Tom Wishon. What was that? That's really cool. What was the process like of having an audiobook made of, and we'll talk about your books too, but that's really cool. Were you involved with that?
Like I told you before, I'm 60 years old, although a young 60, you know, with tons of experience in the golf industry. So that means I was a late learner to, you know, things like, you know, the internet and cell phones and all that kind of stuff, you know, with that. So I'm kind of in the fledgling stages of trying to work to get a little bit wider distribution for some of my books that I've written about golf clubs, you know, through that format, you know, out there with that. But 12 Myths is a short little book. In print form, it's 32 pages. So in audio, you know, it's just a brief workout for you to listen to it. But what we've done is we've taken 12 points about golf clubs that people believe or that have been perpetuated by incorrect marketing, and we tell the truth, you know, about that. You know, for example, you know, one is the longer my driver is in length, the farther I'm going to hit it, you know, for that. The other one, another one is all I need to do to hit a longer driver is to, you know, longer distance with a driver is get one with a lower loft angle. You know, that's another myth that's out there. And there are many of them. You know, there are 12 of them that we've set out there, you know. And, you know, so the answers on these are real short, 2-3 pages, to set the record straight about what are the facts about how golf clubs perform and how you as a golfer can make a much better informed buying decision, you know, when you want to go out and buy golf clubs that actually may help you hit the ball better.
That's awesome. Were you involved in the creation of the audiobook?
No, I had an editor, you know, who was taking care of that. You know, there's always a joke here, you know, in our industry that, you know, the science types, the engineer types, you know, who do all the technical stuff on golf clubs like me, that we don't have the ability to write or explain something in understandable terms. Well, I do. You know, and that's mostly because my scientific training came later, you know, after I fell in love with golf clubs, you know, with that. So, but I still needed an editor, you know, to be able to make sure that my sentences were coherent and all of that sort of thing. So it was my editor who first, you know, turned the 12 myths into an audio file, you know, and we hope to continue to do a few more with the longer, you know, more extensive books that I've written about golf clubs.
Yeah, well, I just want to finish this up by saying if you would like to try to hear, if you'd like a free copy of The 12 Myths That Could Wreck Your Golf Game by Tom Wishon in the audio version, you just have to go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is spelled A-U-D-I-B-L-E. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and sign up today to get your free audiobook and enjoy it. Now, Tom, I also want to address the other books that you have. I'm not exactly sure which order they came in, but there's The Search for the Perfect Golf Club, The Search for the Perfect Driver, and The Right Sticks.
Yeah. I've done a lot of books, and most of my writing in the beginning was done to train the club makers, you know, to teach them to learn more about golf clubs and learn club fitting so they could do a better job of, you know, fitting and building golf clubs. Okay. But then I had this chance in 2005 or 6 to be able to write a book that was aimed at golfers. And that was the first one, The Search for the Perfect Golf Club. You know, the publisher had no marketing behind it. He did have the clout to get it into every major bookstore all around the world, you know, or all around the country. And the thing, you know, became, under golf books, became a bestseller. Also, it was chosen as the golf book of the year by the International Network of Golf, which is the largest organization of professional golf media people in the golf industry. So The Search for the Perfect Golf Club was the first one that came out. That was followed, we did a shorter one, because the driver is so important to so many golfers. We did a book called The Search for the Perfect Driver, you know, in which we really outlined, in really a dialogue format was how I wrote it, how two different golfers, one who was really good and one who was average, you know, went in and visited a club maker and how they got fit for the right club driver for each one of their needs with that. And so that's one that's been out there. You know, I've also been able to expand the 12 myths, going beyond 12 myths, into a book that we called The Right Sticks. And that had 36 different misinformation points about golf clubs that we set the record straight on with that. So most of those are not, you know, as it is right now, 12 myths that could wreck your golf game is, you know, available, you know, in an audio form, you know. So yes, you've been kind enough to point people towards that, you know, through your access there. The other books are in print form right now, but hopefully we'll, you know, be able to convert over to audio. If anybody's really interested in the print form, they can come to my company's website, wishongolf.com, and at the golfer store there, we make our books and information available to anyone who's interested.
Well, I'm not going to, this is not paid. I went to Amazon.com, which actually owns Audible, and just typed in, under the book section, I typed in golf clubs, and search for the perfect ball golf club. Actually, it's called The New Search for the Perfect Golf Club, comes up number one.
Oh, that's right. I did do a rewrite on that just recently because, interesting, The Search for the Perfect Golf Club was discovered by a whole bunch of professional golfers associations in Europe. And so the search book is required reading for membership training for the PGA of Great Britain, Sweden, Holland, and Belgium.
Wow.
Right now. And so for this year's training for the British PGA, you know, they wanted an update version. And so, you know, real quickly, I put together made things up to date because some things in the industry have changed since 2006. And so my editor handled all that for me, and he had the access with Amazon. And so the new search, you know, is probably up there on Amazon.com, and that brings things up to date as of 2011.
Yeah, well, it comes up number one, and also there is a Kindle edition as well, which is anybody who's got an iPad or a Kindle or the Amazon Kindle app on their phone, you can just read it right from there, and it's, you don't pay as much. But congratulations on getting it up there. That's really fabulous that you can do that. And
well, it's great.
Go ahead.
It's really all about trying to get the right information into golfers' minds about this.
Yeah, I've been told by a friend who wrote a book, said, you know, if you can at all possible turn your book into something that is sold on universities or, you know, make it an educational book or a textbook, then that's how you keep a book alive more than anything else. Make it a textbook. All right, I want to get back to custom club fitting because I think it's such a fascinating topic. Because I had another question about it, and that is today in retailers, not the big box retailers, but a lot of golf-specific stores, they have a net set up, or they have a big screen set up that you can hit a ball into, and it all of a sudden looks like your ball flight's going on. And they call, and then they can tell you what clubs to buy, and they'll turn you on to this set of Ping or Callaway or Cleveland or, you know, Tight Lies, Adams, whatever it is. But they call that custom club fitting. Is that?
Yeah, they do.
Is that what that is?
No. I'll just start out with a brief answer on that one. It's
well, club fitting and club making. Club fitting and club making. Where is there a fine line there?
Well, you know, let me put it this way. In club fitting, to get the best, you know, performance for your size, your strength, your athletic ability, and your swing characteristics, there are 13 separate specifications that each need to be custom fit to you and built into that golf club, okay? What you get when you supposedly go into the big golf retail store is 2 of the 13, and only within a very narrow range of options, you know, of those 2 fitting specifications. And what's more, it's only in the driver. 13 other clubs in the bag, they can't help you with, you know, from a pure full specifications, custom fit to you, you know, standpoint right there. So it's what we call either convenience fitting, so it falls within the business model of the golf club business, to still be able to have that club on a rack so it can be pulled off and get sold to you. You know, so if you do have the launch monitor analysis, you know, then what they're going to do is they're going to grab, you know, something that they have on the rack there, and maybe they can adjust the face angle with one of these adjustable hosel pieces that are in some of the drivers now, and the lie angle, which really isn't critical of importance, and that's about it, okay? Yes, you can choose between different shaft flexes in one style of shaft, but a big problem that exists in the industry is there are no standards for flex in the industry, so the R flex from one company has the same stiffness as the S or the A flex from some other companies right there. And that's too bad, you know. So we really can't even consider that much of a fitting specification when the companies don't know whether Callaway's are as stiff as TaylorMade's are or Adams's are, because they are different, you know, out there. So bottom line, it falls back to the concept of the custom tailor for the suit. You want the best suit, you walk into a tailor shop where he's going to take all the measurements and he's going to construct that from scratch to fit you for every specification of your body. You want the best driver or woods or irons or hybrids, wedges or putter for your game, go see a really trained, well-experienced, independent custom club fitter who's going to do the same thing for your golf clubs that the tailor would do for a suit.
Are the big-name brands, you know, we just mentioned them, that are out there on the racks in these big retail stores, are those bad clubs?
No, let me put it this way, and this sometimes, you know, I'm glad you let me do this, you know, because so many times in my passion for trying to get people to go get custom fit instead of buy off the rack, you know, it makes it sound like I'm really hammering on the big golf club companies. I'm only hammering on their business model, that's all.
Okay.
I'm a veteran club designer. 25 years I've been designing golf clubs, and I've designed over 300 different, you know, separate original families of club head models in my career. Okay. I've worked as consultants for club head production foundries. I know what constitutes a good design. And I will be the first one to tell you that the engineering behind the big companies' club head models is superb. They're very well engineered, you know, and it's a very good product. The problem is when you take all that good work in the engineering of the club head and now you build it to golf clubs which are same length, same loft, same face angle, same shaft weight, same total weight, same everything, standard off the rack, it ruins a lot of the performance potential in the engineering of the club head. Hmm. You know, right there. So then maybe the next question is, the golfer says, well, can I just take that TaylorMade or Callaway or Adams club and have it retrofit or refit completely for me? No, not totally, because that head that Adams or any of those people did a superb engineering job on was designed for that one standard length with that one shaft weight with, you know, that one swing weight that they wanted to achieve in their standard specs. If you need a different length, different weighting, that's, you can't do it. you know, with an existing club. You know, you can't change the loft angle on an existing club because they're metal. Back in the old days when I first got into this, when all the woods were made from trees, yeah, you could. You could take a file to the face and change the loft. Can't do that anymore with this. So, seriously, if the golfers really want to see what custom fitting is all about, go find a really good custom club fitter and work with them on a one-on-one basis to be fit for every one of the key fitting specifications to match you.
And you could find a lot of that out at wishongolf.com, right?
Yeah, we have a link up there for find a club fitter, and these are club makers that I have either personally trained or I've known for many years in the industry, or we've screened them, you know, so that we know that they're going to do a competent job of being able to custom fit and custom build golf clubs for golfers that are going to perform, you know, better than standard made off the rack clubs.
Quick question. It doesn't require a long answer. I'm just kind of curious because you said you've had so much experience in so many aspects of the industry these days, and you may not be able to answer for that, but these days, do those major manufacturers have larger budgets in R&D or advertising?
Oh, much larger in advertising. Mm. You know, marketing. I mean, it's many of the biggest companies have reached nearly $55 million in their marketing budgets. That's a lot of money to put out there to enhance their brand image and, you know, and tell people that their golf club will do this or that, you know, for it. So, yeah, the R&D is significant out there, but, you know, to be quite honest with you, I sometimes wonder where a lot of the R&D money gets spent, because as a veteran scientist of golf club design, all the new technology that could instantaneously hit the ball better overnight from the design standpoint has been used up, or it's been limited by changes in the USGA rules, mm-hmm. you know, for this. So there are no new metals out there that are going to hit it farther. You will not find drivers that will hit it farther just from the design of the club, because the USGA has a limit on that. So at that point, what we're left with here, you know, and this is the technology I work in, the one new technology, I say new technology, probably 98% of all golfers have never experienced it, but it can immediately overnight, you know, show an improvement in your ball striking, is what we're talking about, custom club fitting. Done to, you know, with all the different specifications individually fit and built to match you and your swing, you know, with that. The big companies can't do it. They can't build, you know, the $800 million worth of golf clubs they need to sell every year, one at a time, for one golfer at a time. To do those kinds of revenue numbers, they have to pursue the business model of pre-building these golf clubs to standard specifications so they can be shipped to the 14,000 retailers they have to be sold off the rack to you when you walk in the door. It's the only way that these companies can do the business they need to do to sustain their stock prices on this. Whereas golf clubs need to be built one at a time for one golfer at a time, with each of the 13 specs matched to your size, strength, athletic ability, and your swing characteristics. Do that, and you will play to the best of the ability you have as a golfer.
If I took
Fly
my
off the rack and you don't know.
Yeah, well, if I took my Mizuno clubs, which were actually, after I got custom club fit, my club fitter said, you know what, the Mizuno clubs that you used to have before they were stolen, these, they were actually good clubs for you. But if I were to invest in new shafts, would that make much of a difference? And do I need to spend a lot of money on shafts?
Well, there's a whole nother topic, you know, right there.
I know.
Yeah. I'll make a quick answer. Quite honestly, there's no golf shaft in the world that's worth $300 or $400.
Flat, yeah, that just blanket statement, done nothing.
You know, the five performance elements of a shaft, the flex, the bend profile, the weight, the balance point, and the torque, those things can be duplicated in a $40 shaft. For what you've seen in a $300 shaft, you know, with this. That's kind of too bad, you know, because unfortunately, marketing experts definitely know that if we charge a ton for it, people are going to think it's better.
Absolutely.
You know, and a shaft is all about being fit to your club head speed and then your swing elements of How aggressive is your downswing? How forcefully or smoothly do you start the downswing? How late do you hold the wrist cock angle or early before you unhinge it, you know, with that? And so these are the elements. You know, a good trained custom club fitter measures club head speed, then observes your swing for the transition, your tempo, your release, and how you use your strength in the swinging of the golf club. Then they pick the shaft for you, you know, from that. So in an iron shaft, if you don't have a late release, if you don't have an aggressive downswing, then the only thing that you're really going to notice any real performance difference from in a new shaft will be, what does it weigh? You know, do we need to get you into a lighter shaft to match your tempo, or do we need to get you into a heavier shaft so the golf clubs weigh a little bit more because you have a super fast tempo and we need to kind of slow you down a little bit? So shaft weight is really critical in shaft fitting for all golfers. Shaft flex and shaft bend profile become more important the later the release on the downswing is for the golfer. You know, with that. And in irons, iron shafts are always much stiffer than wood shafts, okay, because they're shorter and they're bigger in diameter. And so iron shafts bend less in a quality iron shot than a wood shaft will bend in a shot hit with a wood. And therefore, iron shafts, from a flex standpoint, don't quite contribute as much to the true performance of the shot as a shaft in a wood can. But to a really good golfer with a late release and the more aggressive the downswing, the flex is really important.
Well, you know, I spend so much time talking to instructors and mental coaches and stuff, but I really apologize to you and to all the custom club makers that I don't spend more time on this topic, because I think it seems to be so influential for everybody's game that we just don't get it.
Well, it's so little known. I mean, I mentioned to you on your other, you know, podcast, you know, and this is one to average golfers. Maybe this drives the point home better. You know, and that's the story I told you about baseball bats, softball bats. You know, any of you guys who played baseball or softball, when you went in and chose your bat, you went in there and you picked that bat that had the right length, the right weight, and the right handle diameter, because you knew you couldn't just grab any old bat and go out there and hit the ball as well. Okay? It's no different in golf clubs. The difference is, in the bat business, all the retail stores, sporting goods stores, have sold bats in different lengths and weights and handle diameters for years because they only have to stock one bat per golfer or per ball player. Golf clubs isn't done that way because we have 13 key fitting specifications over 14 different golf clubs, and the companies and the retailers just will never make those options or stock them because it would create such an inventory nightmare that they couldn't stay in business. So golf clubs remain a buy it standard off the rack and hope it works for you, whereas baseball bats and softball bats, you buy commonly always the custom fitting specifications that allow you to hit the ball the best to your ability.
Okay, so full disclosure here. Generally at this point, I would say, so Tom, I would love for you to come back again so we can do more of this. Could you please come back next week? And you go, sure, Fred, I would love to. And then we would sit down and we would record another conversation right after, you know, this. And we'd have two full weeks of content with you. But in full disclosure, we've already recorded that. And it went so well and so long that I said, Tom, we've got to do another episode, but I want it to come first. So we've already. So when he said, when I mentioned to you before, you'll actually get to hear that next week if you're paying attention. So, you know. Tom, you're part of my celebration of reaching 300 episodes of Golf Smarter, and I asked you to come on because you've been on numerous times in Golf Smarter, and you've been so gracious in giving me your time and educating me as well as the listener. I really appreciate your time and your education, and thank you again for helping us.
My pleasure, and congratulations on reaching that big number out there. You've had as many podcasts as I've designed different models of golf clubs.
There you go. But I still, but it still doesn't, I've done, let's just say, you know, there's guys who want to, you know, shoot their age as they get older.
Yeah,
well, I'm at the point now where I have more episodes than I'll ever reach with my driver.
Well, not if you came up to Durango, Colorado in our 6,500-foot elevation. You'd have a chance to knock it out there over 300.
Well, after I get custom fit and have you make me a club.
Yep.
Okay. Tom, thanks so much. Tom Wishon, check out his books and also go to his website, wishongolf.com. And come back next week on a members-only episode, and we're going to get another 45 minutes of Tom. Thank you, Tom.
Fred, my pleasure. And best wishes to everybody in this great game.
And next up for members only, Tom Wishon joins us for part two, or was it actually part one? Anyway, thanks so much for participating in our celebration of our first 300 episodes. I hope that you enjoyed the journey, have learned as much, and improved your game as much as I have. And if you're new to Golf Smarter, welcome. I'm glad you found us. And let me invite you to join Golf Smarter for members only. As a Golf Smarter member, you'll get to hear part two of this conversation with Tom, receive a new episode every single week, and get complete access to our archives that now go beyond 300 recordings. It's only $15 US to join, and really, it's all I ask to help me justify to my wife why I continue to do this. Do it now, please, at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.